Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Samach Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 9 lines from the top. As far as the markings that we will encounter, we have a new marking, the house marking, that appears, but at the same time, we are in the middle of a sugya. The general topic that we are dealing with is the restriction of being moira halocha b'fnei raboi. In fact, we mentioned in our previous year that we are at this daf in the middle of a long bracketed section. We had been dealing with the topic of a Jew and Gentile living in the same courtyard, but we then interrupted that sukkah with this issue of being moira halacha b'fnei rabo, the prohibition of issuing halachic rulings in the presence of one's teacher. On a more specific basis, we were dealing with the practice of showing a slaughterer's knife to the local Talmud Chacham for checking to be nick-free. The knife that's used for slaughtering must be smooth. And this practice of showing one's knife to the local sage is a matter of honor, of kavod, shown to a local rav, a local rabbi, when one is starting his shechita career, or possibly when one is visiting a new community, there is this expectation that one would show his knife to the rav. We continue now with a new marking, and that's this house marking that's featured under our mivneh heading on the side, Sidra Shel Memros Shel Rava. We will see a series of comments made by Rava She Mehavim Kotoros Lehemshech Agamora. These serve as a type of heading for each new sugya that we will encounter. The subtopic that we are going to be dealing with under our Tatnosei, we've noted Tzur B'Mirabonon Chozi L'Nafshe, a person who himself is a Talmud Chacham is allowed to check his own knife. That's Bodek Sakin HaShchita Latzmo, can check his knife for his own personal Shchita. So that even though there is the need for showing one's knife to the local Rav, if one is himself a sage, a scholar, so he can check his own knife for his own personal shechita needs. We now turn to the Gemara, noting the house marking, and also to the side of the Gemara you see a number 1, and toward the end of the narrow lines there is a number 2 representing another halacha, another teaching of Rava. Omar Rava, Tzur B'Mirabonan, this is an expression, Tzur B'Mirabonan is an expression of a referring to a Talmud Chacham. The Gemara in Tainus mentions that it has to do with a young Talmud Chacham, Chozi L'Nafshe. He is entitled to check his shechita knife for his own personal shechita. Rashi says L'Nafshe, Bodek Sakin Lishchot Bo Hu Atzmoi Behemos Sheloi Ve'Ein Tzorch L'Haros L'Raboi. Even though he is a young Talmud Chacham and he has a Rav, he has his own teacher, nevertheless, if he is shechting for himself using his own knife, then he doesn't have to show it to his Rav. The Gemara continues. Ravino Iklo L'Mechuza. Ravino visited Mechuza. Mechuza was the place of Rava. Rava was the Rav in that town. We have an incident here, by the way, that lasts a number of lines. Hence, you have a long Maisa marking. Maisa being an incident. So Ravino visited Mechuza. I see Ushpizchinei Sakina V'komachvi Lei. the Ushpizichne is an innkeeper. So Ravina, who was a traveler, he was visiting the Hoza, so he was hosted by this Ushpizichne, this innkeeper. The innkeeper brought his knife, his Shechita knife, to Ravina, to show Ravina, to check it out. As we explained earlier, there is this concept of, or practice of, showing one's knife to a Talmud Chacham. Omale, Ravina said, Zil amte l'Rava, bring the knife to Rava, he's the Rava of the community. Now, the innkeeper was going to shecht meat, he was going to shecht an animal for the benefit of his guest, for Ravina. Nevertheless, Ravina says, don't show me the knife, show it to Rava, he's the Rava of the community. Omale, so the innkeeper says, Lo savar lo mor, do you not hold from that which Rava himself taught, that a Talmud Chacham who is going to be shechting for himself can check his own knife? So the innkeeper's thinking here was that the knife is going to be used right now for shechting meat for Ravina's benefit. So it would follow that Ravina can check the knife out without having to bestow the courtesy and honor to Rava. Omale, so Ravina says, Ano mizvan zavina, I am going to be buying the meat from you. In other words, I'm paying for your innkeeping services, and I'm going to be paying for my meal. So in effect, I am simply a purchaser of the meat. This doesn't come under the same heading as Rava's teaching, which dealt with a Talmud Chacham shechting his own animal for his own purposes. But rather, as far as our relationship is concerned, Ravina says to the innkeeper, I am simply like, you are for me simply like any other slaughterer, and as such, you have an obligation of showing your knife to the Rav, to the rabbi of the community. We have another incident. This incident lasts quite a few lines, as you can see from our marking. And there are four names that appear in this incident. Let us point out ahead of time, of the four names, two of them are visitors, one of them is the host, and one of them is the Rav of the community. Rabbi Elozer Mehagronia v'Rav Acho Bar Tachlifa. Iklu'u lebei Rav Acho Brei Dravika. So these two, Rav Elozer and Rav Acho, visited, they went to the house of, they went to visit Rav Acho Bar Brei Dravika. Be'asrei the Rav Acho Bar Yankov, in the community of Rav Acho Bar Yankov. I hope that the names don't pose a source of confusion, being aware of the fact that there are three Rav Achos in this story. Hence, it's important to note their differences through their fathers. So we have the scenario: two visitors, the home of Brei Dravika, and the Rav is Rav Acho Bar Yankov. Bo'i Rav Acho Brei Dravika lemevadu igla tilsa. The balabos, the host, Rav Acho Brei Dravika, wanted to prepare for them an igla tilsa. There are different opinions as to what an igla tilsa is, but for the first shot that Rashi gives, it's a calf that's a third of its development. In other words, a third of its full size, which is considered, it's at that point considered very tasty, a delicacy. So you have the host wanting to slaughter this igla tilsa for them, this calf. Aisi sakino v'komachvilu. He, the host, brought his knife and showed it to his visitors. The idea of checking the knife from Nix, and his visitors were scholars, so it was his idea of showing honor to his hosts, to his visitors, who were Talmidei Chachomim. Omar lohu, Rav Acho Bar Tachlifa. So Rav Acho, the son of Tachlifa, one of the visitors, said, Lo lechu shlei l'saba? Do you not concern yourself or feel that it's important to show the knife to Rav Acha bar Yankov Saba, I mean the elder sage, the Rav of the community? Don't you think he is the one to whom the knife should be shown and presented? Amar Lahu, Rebbe Lozer, Mehagronya. So this is the second guest. He says, Hochi Omar Rava. Thusly says Rava. Tzur b'rabbanon chazi l'nafshei. That a Talmud Chacham who is slaughtering for himself is allowed to check the knife for himself. Now, in this case, as opposed to the Maisa before, here there's no money being exchanged. There's no issue of purchasing, of selling. And hence, it's closer to the original teaching of Rava that in this case, since it's an issue of personal slaughtering as opposed to slaughtering for sale, this should not require the showing of the knife to the local Rav. So after hearing Rabbi Lozer Mehagronia's reference to Rava's teaching, so Chazi. So he looked at the knife without it having been presented to Rabbi Lozer Mehagronia of the community leader. The Anish Rabbi Lozer Mehagronia and Rabbi Lozer Mehagronia suffered some type of punishment. The Gemara asks, why should he be punished for doing for checking the knife, which seems to be okay. But did Rava not say that a Talmud Chacham can look at a knife, can check the knife if it's for his own purposes? The Gemara answers, Shiny Hossam, that story with involving Rabbi Lozer and Agronia is different to Aschilu Bichvoda because they already started with the concern for the honor of the local Rav. So once that was raised as a suggestion, why not show it to the Rav? They should have gone all the way with honoring the Rav of the community, Rav Achar Bar Yankov. V'boyesema, another explanation for why Rav Lozer Ben Agrona was punished was Shiny Rav Achar Bar Yankov de Muflog. The general practice would have been okay. In other words, in general, this Rav Lozer Ben Agronia, who was a visitor, and the knife was being used for shefting for himself, for his own purposes, it would have been okay for him to check it out. However, Rav Acham Yankov is different. This Rav of the community is different. Muflog means he is exceptionally great. Rashi says, Ma'od Zokein V'chacham, he's very old and wise. So in a situation where the local Rav is of exceptional distinction, then under all circumstances, even when it's a matter of slaughtering for oneself, the knife should be shown to him. Omar Rava, another teaching of Rava, and here the issue is what's called La Fushe Meisura. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava, La Fushe Meisura Afilu Befonav Shapir Domi. If a person finds himself in a situation where he's witnessing someone who's about to commit a sin, Lafushi means to separate Meisur from the commission of a transgression. So then one may issue a ruling, in this case a warning ruling the prohibited nature of what is about to be done, even if that ruling is in the presence of one's teacher. Ravina Havi Yosef Kameda Ravashi. Ravina was in the presence of Ravashi, Chazi Alu Gavro, Deka Osar Le Lechamre Betzinsa Beshabata. And Ravina noticed someone was tying, Osar is tying his donkey to a tzinsa, is a palm tree, on Shabbos. Now there is an iser of using trees. It's called Mishtamish Be'ilon. There's a prohibition of using trees on Shabbos. And wrapping or tying your donkey to the tree falls under this category. Rama Bei Kola, Ravina screamed, stop, don't tie your donkey to the tree. Velo Ashgach Bei, and the person didn't listen. Omale, Ravina said, Leve Hai Gabra B'Shamta. So that person should be in excommunication. Shamta is Cherem, a form of excommunication, for having violated this ruling and not heeding to it, he deserves to be excommunicated. Omar Lei, Ravino asked Rav Ashi, Ki hai gavno mi mischaza keafkerusa? That which I did in your presence, is that considered an act of brazenness, of chutzpah? Afkerusa, Rashi says, chutzpah, or not? Omale, Ravashi says, you don't have to worry. Ein chochma v'ein tvuna v'ein eitzah leneged Hashem. And this pasuk is explained. Kol mokoyim shiyesh bo chilu Hashem. Whenever there is the violation of the honor of the Almighty at stake, and in this case, the chilu Hashem is the brazen violation of Hilchus Shabbos. Ein cholkin kavod l'rav. So the concern of ein mer and halacha b'fnei rabo doesn't apply. The idea of cholkin kavod is bestowing honor to one's rav and withholding halachic rulings, etc., doesn't take place, doesn't hold, is not binding when there is an issue of chilul Hashem. The Gemara continues, Omar Rava. Again, we have a third Rava teaching. And on the side of the Gemara, under the Tatnose, you can see we have written Moira Halacha, Bifnei Rabo Chayav Misa, Shelo Bifnei Rabo Eino Chayav Misa. In the presence of one's Rav, so one is guilty of death, death at the hands of heaven, we call Misa Bidei Shamayim. And if one's not in front of the Rav, so then it's not, it's Osir, it's prohibited, but it's not guilty of Misa. Omar Rava, Bifonav Osir V'chayav Misa. Rashi says, Bifonav Osir L'hoiros, it's also to paskin, to rule halachic rulings in the presence of one's Rav, and V'chayav Misa Bidei Shemayim, one who does so would be involved with a capital level offense, but not punishable by a court of law, but rather punishable at the hands of heaven. And now Rashi points out, V'hod Rava lav lafrushe mi'isur koi, and with our markings, this Rashi makes a lot more sense. You notice we had a period before this Omar Rava, creating a total break from that which was set dated just before. Rashi is anticipating that maybe he didn't have the markings, so he's pointing out that this comment of Rava is not associated with that which Rava spoke about just before, of Lafrushe mi'isur. Elo al habolishal. This is simply referring to a case of someone who comes to ask a question, so the one being presented to the question should be aware that if he's going to answer in the presence of his Rav, he's getting involved with what's called a Chiyuv Misa. The Gemara continues, Shelo b'fon of Osir v'ein Chayav Misa. The Gemara asks, and now this question lasts a long time. You can see it's a long question, and climax of the question is going to appear after we finish learning the source. So the Gemara asks, V'shelo b'fon of loy, and not in the presence of one's Rav, are you saying there is no Chiyuv Misa? V'ha Tanya. We have a Tanaic source, and in this Tanaic source there is an incident, and at the end of this incident and the source, we see a distance between the one issuing a ruling, who was a Talmud. He issued a ruling, Shelo b'fnei rabo, and yet there was a Chiyuv Misa. So now let's see the whole source. V'ha Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yankiv Omer, Lo Mesu b'nei Aaron elo al Shehoru halocha b'fnei Moshe Rabon. The sons of Aaron died, and this is featured, their death is featured in Parshas Shmini in Sefer Vayikra, and three Parshas later, you have the Parsha of Achrei Mois, where the Parsha begins, Achrei Mois b'nei Aaron, after the death of the sons of Aaron. So this is a reference to Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, who died in their offering it was called the Esh Zorah in the Mishkan. On the day the Mishkan was dedicated, they brought fire in the context of an incense offering, and they were punished. So Rav Losser Rangav says that their punishment, their death, was a function of their being Moira Halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabbeinu. They issued a halachic ruling even though Moshe Rabbeinu was present. My Dorush, what was their halachic ruling? The Pasuk says, V'nosnu b'nei Aaron ha-Kohen Esh ala Mizbeach. Omru, they, Nadav and Avihu, figured, Afal pi sho'esh yoredes min ha-shamayim, even though there was a miracle and there was a heavenly fire, mitzvah lahavi min ha-hedyot. There nevertheless is an expectation, a command to provide a personal common fire. And that was their halachic ruling, that even though there is a heavenly fire, nevertheless one is supposed to provide a common fire for the purpose of the sacrifices. The Talmud Echod Hoyalo, the Rebbe Lezer, Shehoira Halacha Befonov. There is an incident involving, this is Rebbe Lezer ben Hurkanis, otherwise known as Rebbe Lezer HaGodol, an incident where he had a student, a Talmud Echod, that was Moira Halacha in his presence. Amar Rebbe Lezer, Imo Shalom Ishta, Rebbe Lezer turns to his wife, her name was Imo Shalom, and he says to her, Tomi Ani Im Yotzi Zeshno, so I would be amazed if this fellow lives out his year. Velo Hotzi Shnoso, and he did not live out his year. Amra Lo, she asks her husband, Novi Atar, are you a prophet? Omar Lo, Lo Novi Anochi, Velo Ben Novi Anochi, I'm not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet, Elo Akach Mikublani, but rather this is my tradition. Thusly I have received a tradition. Kol Amir Halacha Bifnei Raboi Chayav Misa. Anyone who issues a halachic ruling in the presence of his Rav, he is Chayav Misa. He's guilty of death at the hands of heaven. The Omer Rabba Bar Chana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Oysa Talmud, in the story that we had, where we dashed underlined Talmud Echad, Rabbi Yochanan is referring to that Talmud Echad in the source. He says that Talmud was Yehuda ben Gurya Shmo. His name was Yehuda ben Gurya. V'hoya rochoik mimenu sholosh parsos. He was at a distance of 3 parsa. He wasn't literally in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer, but he was at quite a distance. So the original comment of Rava that Shelo Bufanov also Rein Chayav Misa, here we see was Chayav Misa even though he was Shelo Bufanov. So this is the question. The Gemara answers Bufanov Have. The Rashi says Bufanov Have Vahai de Kotoni Rochok Mimenu Min Shehoya Rochok Mekoimoy Mimokoim Rabo Sholosh Parsos. In other words, the actual ruling was in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer, and when it says that there was a rochok mimenu, when Rabbi Yochanan's comment about rochok mimenu, it meant that his dwelling, he lived far away. But as far as the incident, umiu ki oiri kame ori, Rashi points out that when the ruling took place, though, he was in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara asks, for rochok mimenu sholosh parsos komar. But Rabbi Yochanan says he was at a distance of 3 parsa. And if the ruling was not at a distance, so of what interest is there to us that he lived 3 parsa away? That information would be of no consequence. The Gemara answers, Uletameich, according to you that are interested in or trying to prove your point that he was literally far away at the point of the ruling by virtue of the information conveyed. Shmoy v'shem oviv loma. What do I need to know the name of the person himself? What is that Rabbi Yochanan tells us the guy's name, the Talmud's name was Yehuda, and that he was Ben Gurya, his father's name was Gurya. What do I need that information for? In other words, if everything Rabbi Yochanan is saying carries with it some type of halachic or literal halachic significance, so the information of his name and father's name, what bearing, what relevance does that have? The only reason Rabbi Yochanan said what he did was simply to show that it was an actual incident and not just some type of moshel, some type of analogy or parable, but rather it was a real incident. So as far as we are concerned, we are still defending Rava's teaching, and that is that only befonov it is chayav misa. And as far as the incident in this source involving the Talmud Echad, as the Gemara answered, this Talmud was in the presence of Rabbi Elezer when he issued his ruling. As far as Rabbi Yochanan's information is concerned about Rochok Mimeno Sholosh Parsos, that's detailed information just to show that it was a real story, and that meant that he lived 3 parsa away from Rabbi Elezer, but the actual incident of the halachic ruling was such that it took place in Rabbi Elezer's presence. Omar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Omar Rav Yochanan, kol hamura halacha b'fnei Rabba. Anyone who rules in the presence of his teacher, his master, his teacher. So you see a diamond appears there on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading. We indicate Sidra Shel Deos, Mao Onsha Shel Hamur Alocha Bifnei Rabba. It's a series of opinions as to what is the fate of one who does issue a halachic ruling in the presence of his teacher. So the first approach here is that of Rabbi Yochanan, that anyone who is Mura Halacha Bifnei Rabba, Roi Lakishoi Nocha, she is fitting to be bitten by a snake. Shnemar, the Pasuk says, Vayan Eliyo Ben Brachel Habuzi Vayomer Tsoyer Ani Liyomim, and there's a missing words here on the side of the Gemara. Under the Pasuk in Eov, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Vav, it goes on to say, V'atem, you see, we've written this on the side of the Gemara, V'atem Yeshishim, I am young and you are old, Alkein Zochalti Vo'iro Mechavos Dei Eschem. He says, I am young and you are old, and therefore I withhold myself from expressing my opinion. And in this pasuk, you see the word zochalti was used. And the Gemara continues by saying, uksiv im chamas zochale ofar. And this pasuk is a reference to snakes that are zochale ofar. They creep along the ground, the dirt, the ground. So that in this pasuk, it was also pointed out that he being young, he withheld himself from expressing his opinion because expressing one's opinion in the presence of one's Rav would lead to being, in fact, bitten by a snake. We continue in the Gemara, number 2, Ziri Omar Rabbi Chanina, Nikra Chote, one who is Moira Halocha B'Fnarabu, is called a sinner. Shnemar Belibi Tzofanti Imrosecho Laman Lo Echta Loch. Rashi points out, Sofanti imrosecha, kinasti dvorai mila hoirois, pemokum she chote alein. I withheld myself from ruling, halachic rulings in a situation that if I would rule, I would be considered a sinner. So we see the withholding one's rulings is a avoidance of being considered a chote. Rav Hamnuna Rami. Rav Hamnuna raises a contradiction. In one pasuk it says, I kept my thoughts to myself, kept my rulings to myself. And the other pasuk also featured by David HaMelech, he says, I announced my tzedek, my divrei Torah, in public. So what was David HaMelech's practice? Was he one who withheld halachic rulings, keeping it to himself, or was he one who publicized them? Mor says, Lo kashya, kan bizman she'ira ha'iri kayom, kan bizman she'ein ira ha'iri kayom. It all depends on whether ira ha'iri, who was a teacher of David, David's teacher, that was his name, Ira Hayri, whether he was alive or not. So the pasuk indicating withholding, Sofanti im Belibi Sofanti Mosecha, that's when Ira Hayri was alive. The pasuk that said Bisarti Tzemka Rav, that's when Ira Hayri was no longer alive. We have a bracketed section in which the Gemara will prove actually the Gemara will make a reference to Ira Hayri in another context concerning Matnos Kahuna. So this bracketed section is a diversion from our topic, hence we have the brackets, and you can see it's a four-line bracketed section by just noting the bracket length indicator. After the brackets, we continue with the issue of what is the fate of a Mura Halocha B'Tnei Rabba. You can see the diamonds continue after the brackets. That having been said, let's now go straight through the bracketed section. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavdo, Kol HaNoisin Mat Noisav L'Koyin Echod. Anyone who practices giving all of his priestly tithes, his matnas kahuna, to one kohen, maybe rov l'olam, he is guilty of bringing famine to the world. So you can see there's an expectation of one dividing his matnas kahuna, the priestly tithes. Kohanim receive different types of tithes. So the matnas kahuna are to be distributed to different kohanim if you, of course, have enough to do so. Not to focus on giving all of your tithes to one kohen. Now, how do we know this? That it's one who does thusly is maybe rov le'olam shenemar. The pasuk says, Ira ha'iri hoya kohen le'david. V'chi le'david hu da'avik kohen l'chuyam lo'avik kohen. The pasuk says that Ira ha'iri was a kohen for David. Does that in and of itself make sense? Was he a kohen for David and not a kohen for everyone else? Elo shehoya mishager loy matnoisav. Rather, what the pasuk is saying is that David HaMelech sent all of his matonis to Ira Hayiri alone. Uksiv basrei, and it says afterwards, vayhi ro'ov bimei David. And there was a famine in the years of David. We should point out there, and we have a little note, that the basis of these brackets, you can see in the Rashi, Dibur Maschil Moridin. Because as we go on in the Gemara, it says, Rebbe Lezer Omer, Moridin Oso Migidulaso. Now, if we didn't have a marked Gemara, one could easily have thought that Rebbe Lozer's comment of Moridin Oso Migidulaso, which means we remove him from his position of loftiness, of honor, was a comment going on this issue of Noisim HaNoisiv L'Koyin Echad. But that's not so. And Rashi takes pains to say, Li'el Koy. If you look in Rashi, Moridin Oso Migidulaso, Rashi says, Li'el Koy. This is a reference to that which was stated before, this Iri. It's a reference to that which Ziri mentioned, the Mura Halacha B'fnei Rabo. Ziri was our number two diamond. So now, that having been said, we continue back. We continue with the topic of Mura Halacha B'fnei Rabo, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Moridin Oisoi Migidul Asoi. One who is guilty of issuing halachic rulings in the presence of his Rav, he is punished by being removed from his position of authority. Shenemar vayoymer olozer alkein olanshi hatzava v'chulei, and this pasuk comes from a topic in the Torah which deals with the cleansing of vessels that one acquired from Gentiles, which we call giulei oivde kechavim. It has to do with purging vessels from forbidden foods that they had absorbed in the course of their being used for cooking forbidden items. That's the topic behind this pasuk. So the Gemara goes on to say, Afagav de Omar Luhu La'achi Abot Siva Vosi Lo Siva, even though he told the people there that which I am teaching was actually something taught to Achi Abba, my father's brother. Elazar was the son of Aaron. Aaron's brother was Moshe Rabbeinu. So even though he told them that I was not the one charged with this halacha, but rather it was something that was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. And you might say that, well, in that respect, so he was bestowing honor to Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, even so, afilu achi anish, even so, even though he gave this type of disclaimer that what I am teaching you is really something that was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu, and nevertheless, Elazar claimed by virtue of the fact that he did say over the halacha, even though he mentioned this disclaimer, he nevertheless was punished. Rashi says, "Es achi abo tziva dechola kovod l'moshe." Elazar was fulfilling, honoring Moshe. Tiva shir tziva Hashem es Moshe. V'hoira hilchis gil ach es azov. And he, Elazar, taught the halachas of purging vessels from their absorption. Yanish leired migedula sheposkulo mikami hochi. He was removed from honor, from a position of distinction that he was supposed to have received. Now, what is the position of honor that he was supposed to have received? Dichtiv lufnei Elazar hakohen yamod. That is a pasuk indicating that Yehoshua, who would succeed Moshe Rabbeinu as the leader, was supposed to ask his halachic questions to present his questions to Elazar. V'lo ashkechon deitzdrich leYehoshua, and yet we find no situation where Yehoshua actually presented any halachic shailas, any questions of halacha to Elazar. So that even though he was designated to be the leading halachic authority, where even the leader of the people, where Yehoshua would present his questions to him, that never took place. You can see that we have a triangle that has a colored in tip, and on the side of the Gemara we have a nosei, a topic heading. Loma nenash Yehoshua b'li bonim. Why was Yehoshua punished with the punishment of not having sons? Under the Mivneh heading, you can see we have triangles that appear in two different directions. These are Deos Chalukos Alma Nenash Yehoshua, opposing opinions, differing opinions as to why Yehoshua was punished in this, that he had no bonim. Omar Rabbi Levi, kol hamoisiv milo kamei rabbe. Anyone who is moira halocha bifnei rabo, ozil lishoil beloy vlad. Now, we should point out that in addition to this triangle marking, this is also number 4 in the list of what fate befalls a moira halocha bifnei rabo. So that's what we are dealing with now. This Moisiv Milo Kamei Rabbe is someone who responds. Rashi says Meshiv Dover Moira Halacha. One who is Moira Halacha in front of his Rav. What happens? Ozil L'Sheol Beloy Vlad. He goes to death. L'Sheol means death. He dies without offspring. Shenemar. The pasuk says, and this pasuk focuses on Yehoshua being guilty of being moira halacha b'fnei rabbi in the incident involving Eldad and Medad. For those who are familiar, so the Torah reports a story where Eldad and Medad were saying prophecy regarding Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua being his successor. And the pasuk says, "Vayan Yehoshua ben Nun meshores Moshe mibachura vayomer Adoni Moshe klayim." Moshe Yehoshua is very upset with their Eldad and Medad's having said their prophecy, and he said they should be destroyed because because of what they did. Now, Rashi says, "Kloin ruim heim lekach, da'avi lei kemoira halacha." This statement on the part of Yehoshua of suggesting a fate for Eldad and Medad, why is he suggesting what their fate should be when Moshe Rabbeinu was there? So this is, as Rashi points out, this is like Moira Halacha b'fnei Rabbi, and this is of which Yehoshua is in violation. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis Uksiv. It says in Sefer Divrei HaYomim, where the genealogy of people are reported in the Psukim, as far as Yehoshua's predecessors, Yehoshua was the son of a gentleman by the name of Nun. So, and Nun had a father. So in reporting this genealogy, it says Nun Beno. Nun was the son of he who preceded him, Yehoshua Beno, and Yehoshua is the son of Nun. And as Rashi points out, after Yehoshua, there is no more lineage that is recorded in the Psukim, indicating that Yehoshua was childless, leaving no sons, and that, as far as this opinion of that opinion of Rabbi Levi, that was the fate that Yehoshua was to suffer by virtue of his being Moira Halacha b'fnei Rabbi. Upliga de Rabbi Abba bar Papa. Now, we have a long point, and you can see we have a long point marking indicating thusly. The teaching of Rabbi Levi and regarding Yehoshua's fate is at odds with Rabbi Abba bar Papa's approach. The Omar Rabbi Abba bar Papa, and the inverted triangle is here to show the fact that Rabbi Abba is in opposition or in contrast to Rabbi Levi's approach. He says, "Lo nenas Yeshua b'shvil shebitel es Yisrael lailo achas mipiria v'ribya." Yeshua was punished measure for measure to have no children. Rashi says, "Lios ariri." That's a person that dies without leaving children, and that was his fate because he was responsible for being mevatel es Yisrael, from keeping the Jewish people from their wives for one night. And the Gemara will explain all of this, give you all of the background. But the point is that he prevented them from engaging in procreation, albeit for one night, but because of that, he suffered this fate of being childless. Shenemar, now the Gemara gives the background. Vayhi b'yos Yehoshua b'richo, vayiso eino vayar. Yehoshua was involved in a military operation in Yericho, and he raised his eyes and he beheld there was a figure standing in front of him. Uksiv vayomer ki ani sar tzavo Hashem atabosi, and the figure who was standing in the presence of Yehoshua was in fact an angel, and declaring to Yehoshua, "I have arrived now. I am coming now." Omar lo, the Maloch, this angel, the Sar Tzava Hashem, says to Yehoshua, he comes with a complaint against Yehoshua's behavior and decisions. He says, "Emesh bitaltem tomid shelbeinu arbayim." Yesterday, you were mevatel. You prevented the offering of the afternoon daily sacrifice. V'achshav bitaltem Talmud Torah. And now you are preventing them from engaging in Torah study. So Yehoshua asks, "I hear that you have complaints, you have tainus against me for having involved the people in this military action, and as a result not offering the daily sacrifice, the afternoon daily sacrifice, and now it's dark and you are complaining that I am preventing them from Torah study. Al-Eza Mehen Bosa, which is the main offense that motivates your coming?" Omar lo atabasi, I'm coming now. And the now is a reference to the nighttime prevention of their Torah study. What was taking place here is that Moshe, that Yehoshua, kept them on military alert, even though it was nighttime, which is a time in which there is no real military engagement. And as a result of their not needing to be in a military alert right now, they could have used the evening for Torah study, and yet he prevented them from that. And that's what the angel is saying: I'm coming now. Miyad vayelech Yeshua b'layla hu b'soich ha'emek. There's another girsa that you find elsewhere, but shalon, you know, that that we see here. Rashi quotes this in his that is the Bach quotes this in his girsos. And the girsa that he has, the Bach has, is Miyad Vayolen Yeshua Balaila Hu Besocha Om Uksiv Besocha Emek Malami Shalom Ba'oim Kashel Halocha. So we continue in the Gemara. The version that we have is Miyad Vayelech Yeshua Balaila Hu Besocha Emek V'yomer Rabbi Yochanan Malami Shaholach Ba'oim Kashel Halocha. And it tells us that he immediately took action. He immediately responded to the Malach's Malach's complaint, and they engaged in Torah study. Ugmiri. Now we come to the climax of the long point. We have a tradition, the Cholzman Sha'oron Ushchina Shruyin Shalobim Koman, that when the Oron, when the holy ark containing the Luchos, we'll just say the holy ark for the time being. There's a big discussion about this issue about which Oron we are really in fact referring to, but when the Oron is not in its place, that's when the Oron and Shechina are shruyin shelo begon asurin betashmish hamita. And it should be pointed out, the Rashi, let's look at the Rashi together. Gemiri de kolzman she'oron ushchina shruyin shelo b'mkoymon v'oysa laylo shochicham ha'malach oyu mevatlin talmud Torah b'shvil shoyu orvin alo ir. That night that the Malach came to protest Yoshua's behavior, they were lying in orvin, means they were lying in siege. We call it military alert, or laying siege on the city. On that evening, the Oron, which accompanies them into battle, was not restored to its place in Gilgal, where the Mishkan was located. It was that night that, in addition to the fact that they were on military alert, and as we said, not learning Torah, they were also not with their wives. And that is Bitul Piriviribya. And that's what we just read in the Gemara itself. We go back to the Gemara. Gemiri de Cholzman Sha'oron Ushchina Shruyim Shelo B'Mekomon, when the Aron and the Divine Presence are not in their place, and their place is a reference to being in the Mishkan. So Asurim B'Tashmish Mita, they are forbidden to engage in intimate relations with their wives. Omer Shmuel Bar Inyo Mishmei de Rav. Rav Shmuel says, in the name of Rav, Godol Talmud Torah Yoser Me'akrovas Tmidim. Greater is the engagement in Torah study than the offering of sacrifices. The Omar Leh, we saw in the above incident, Atabasi, where the Malach says, I am coming now. What's the primary motivation of my coming is the fact that you are preventing them from Torah study by keeping the people in their military action of laying siege on the city. So that even though the day before they had in fact not offered the daily afternoon sacrifice, that itself wasn't sufficient reason for the Malach to come. But the preventing them from Torah study, that is already a different story. Omer Rav Bruno, Omer Rav, Kol Yoshein Bekilo She'ish V'ishtoi Shruyin Ba, on the heels of the idea of Piri V'ribya, of procreation and intimacy between husband and wife, we have this comment that says anyone who sleeps in the same room. Kila is the room she'ish v'ishto shuyim ba, where a man and his wife are located. Olav ha'kosav omer, regarding such a person, it says, Neshe ami tigrushun mibeis tanugeha. The pasuk expressing the idea of your chasing out the women folk of my people. In other words, the couple will not engage in intimacy in the presence of others. So you have no business being an outsider to be in the same room with a husband and wife. Well, of course, a husband and wife, where they are sleeping. The Omer of Yosef, afilu b'ishto nida. Rav Yosef goes so far as to say that this prohibition admonishment of one who sleeps in a room where a couple is sleeping applies even when the couple won't engage in intimacy because of the fact that the wife is a nida. She's experiencing her monthly cycle of blood flow, which of course is a time when a husband cannot be with his wife. Nevertheless, the outsider should not be there. Rava disagrees with Rav Yosef and says, Imishto nida, if she in fact is a nida, tavo alav bracha, then blessed be the one who is present there. In other words, he would serve as an additional deterrent for the couple to engage in intimacy, which at this point would be a serious offense. The Gemara, though, rejects Rava and says, Volohi. Rava's comment is not in place. The Anu Idno Ma Natre, until now, who was guarding them, the couple, keeping the husband away from his wife when she is Anita? Obviously, even without anyone else there, the seriousness of this halachic consideration of this violation is enough to deter the comment from being to deter the couple from being together without the need of this outsider. And hence, it's the Gemara is showing how it's improper for a married couple to be chaperoned, so to speak, by an outsider sleeping in the same room with them. As you can see, at this point, the brackets closes, and we spoke about these brackets during our previous shiur. And we made a brief reference, if I'm not mistaken, at the opening of today's shiur as well, that the section of Gemara till now has been dealing with the issue of Meira Halacha B'fnei Rabo. Just prior to the brackets that started on Samach Beis Umebeis, the Gemara was engaged in the issue of a Jew dwelling in the same courtyard with an idol worshiper, and all that entailed, the restrictions that imposed on the Jews from carrying from their houses to the courtyard. We pick up with that topic. Hahu mavua davadayer bo lachmon bar ristik. There was a mavui, an alleyway, and one of the residents, his name was Lachmon bar Ristak, and he was an idol worshipper. Omrulei ogur lon rishusach. So the Jewish residents turned to Lachmon and said, would you not rent to us your holding in this alleyway? In other words, this is all in attempt to create a heter for them, an allowance for them to carry from their courtyards to the Movui. But the virtue of the fact that there was this Gentile was one of the residents that posed a problem for them. And in order to circumvent that problem, to solve the problem, a rental would be necessary. So they turned to him, would you rent to us your holding in this area? Lo ogre lehu, and he did not rent to them. Osu omru le l'abaye. So the Jewish residents of that Movui then turn to Abaye with their problem. Now, a triangle appears in our markings, and on the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivne heading, where we've written, Shnei Pisronos Legoi Shador B'movui Veinu Rotzel Aski Rishus. We see two suggested solutions for the problem of an idol worshipper living in an alleyway together with other Jews, and he doesn't want to rent to them his holding. So Omar Lahu, Abaye says as follows: Zilu batilu rishusaychu legabi chad. All of you, the rest of the Jews, should mevatel should we'll say abandon or grant their holdings to one Jew, so that all of them, all the rest of the Jews, are mevatel their holding to one Jew. As a result of that, havelei yochid b'mokom nochri. As a result of their renouncing their holding in the mavui to one, so it then creates a situation of what's called yochid b'mokom nochri, one Jew, in the presence of the nochri, in this case Lachmon bar Mistak, the yochid b'mokom nochri lo osar. And as we have learned earlier on our previous daf, that according to Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, a yochid b'mokom nochri, the nochri does not present a problem when he is in the presence of one Jew. Omru lei, so the questioners said back to Abaye, mi dihu taimo elo delo shchiach de dairi. The heter of yochid b'mokom nochri is based on the fact that it's not a common dwelling situation to have one Jew with an idol worshiper. And we saw the svara for that is that the idol worshippers are suspect of shvichus domim, of murder, and Jews won't find themselves in alone with a goy. V'hochoho kodairi. But here, in our situation, even though you say in legal terms it's like one, but nevertheless we are a number of Jews living together with this goy. Omar lehu. So Abaye says back, kol betuli rishusayu gabi chad, this whole phenomenon of renouncing ownership in the favor of one to one, milsa de la shrichahi, is an uncommon situation. Milsa de la shrichah lo gozru b'hu rabbonan, and in uncommon situations, the rabbonan did not impose their restrictions. So that even though there is a general restriction of Jews living together with the goy because of the problem of Shelma Yuma be myself, we don't want Jews to learn from the ways of idol worshippers. However, just like in the situation of Yochid b'mokom nochri as being something that's unusual, so too where all of them are mevatel their rishus in the favor of one Jew is also an unusual situation. And as a rule of thumb, things that are lo shechiach, things that are unusual, the rabbanon do not impose their restrictions, and hence it is a situation of yochid b'mokom nochri, and there is no prohibition in such a case of Jews carrying in and out of their houses in this situation. Also, Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua omra l'shmaitza kamei de Rava. So Rav Huna went and told this teaching over to Rava. In other words, that which we just learned, Abaye's explanation, Abaye's solution, he told to Rava, Omar lei, Rava said, im kein, now we're at the top of Samach Dalet Omed Aleph, if that's so, bitalta toiras eruv me'oso mavui. You have voided the rules of Eruv with regard to that alleyway. The rules of Eruv imply that multiple courtyards that open to a common alleyway, they all get together, they pool their food together to create one ownership. But if you're going to do this, meaning they are all mevatel their rishus to one resident, so you're not going to have any eruv preparation. The eruv is the collection of the food, which is the normal way of allowing carrying from courtyards into alleyways. The Gemara says de ma'arvi. They did in fact make an eruv, the Jews amongst themselves, even though it doesn't help because there is this goy there. So the Gemara asks, well, Yomru, well, if that's what happened, And we're going, and if we allow this, then those people will say Eruv Moyo B'Mokom Nochri, that an Eruv is effective even when a Goy is present. That's what outsiders would see. So the answer, D'machri Zinon, we make an announcement that the Eruv, let it be known that the Eruv that we made is not beneficial, and we are not carrying from our courtyards to the Mavui, and that which you see carrying is, in this case, in the Mavui itself, is because the Mavui is a Rishus HaYochid. So, people are going to hear this announcement and then understand that, in fact, it's not a case of an Eruv that helps B'Mokom Nochri. Now, if we what we just explained, we based ourselves on the Rashi. Let's take a look at the Rashi together. The Machrezinon at the top line, he says, Havu Yodin, Shein Eruvenu Moil Klum, let it be known that our Eruv is not effective. Vein Onu Motzin Mechatzro Seinu Lamovui, and we are not carrying from our courtyards to the Movui. Umash Onu Metatlun Besocho, and that which you see us carrying in the alleyway itself, Beshvil Shirushus Hayochid Hi. It's because it is a Rishus Hayochid. So the Gemara asks, Achrazosa Ladardiki, are you going to rely on this Achraza for, Dardiki literally means for children, but you might make the announcement now, but people who come later, future generations, aren't going to hear this announcement, and they are going to see you carrying in this alleyway, and they're going to come to the conclusion that an Eruv helps B'Mokom Nochri. Elo Omar Rava. So Rava says, this is the solution. Lezel Chad Minayu. Again, let's just repeat. The problem here is we've got an alleyway with several Jews living there, and namely they have courtyards leading to this alleyway, and one of the courtyards is owned by Lachmon Baristak, who is a Gentile. They wanted to rent from Lachmon Baristak his holding in the area, thereby removing the presence of the Gentile in a halachic sense, but he did not cooperate, and we're back to the problem of a Gentile, of an idol worshiper, who is present amongst multiple Jews, and under those circumstances, they can't carry from their houses to the from the courtyard to the alleyway. Elo Omar Rava, Rava's solution, and that's why we have him as a second triangle. Lezel Chad Minayu, one of the Jews should go, Likrav Lei, Velisho Minei Duchta, he should become friendly with this Lachmon, and then ask of Lachmon a favor, can I borrow from you a place in your house, or in your courtyard, Velenach Be Midi, and then the Jew would keep something in this spot that Lachmon would loan to him, and if by having that relationship of the Jew having a type of, we'll say, borrowed holding on a part of Lachmon's property, Davile Keshiro Ulikito, that would make the Jew like a worker. Keshiro Ulikito are different types of workers. These are, in this case, you have a Jew in service or working for the Goy. The Omer of Yudah Mar Shmuel, he teaches, Afilu Schiro Vafilu Kito no sein Eruvo Vidayo. If the worker of the Gentile, of the idol worshipper, is a Jew, then he can contribute to the Eruv. Omer Le Abaye L'Rav Yosef, Hoyu Shom Chamisha Schiro V'Chamisha Likito Mahu. What would be the case if in the house of the Nochri you have five workers that are working for the Goy? And again, we said before that the idea before of the rental of a spot, the borrowing of a spot in the Goy's house makes it such that he is like a worker for the Goy. And we just saw Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel saying that a worker for the Goy can contribute, the Jewish worker for the Goy can contribute to the Eruv, thereby getting around the whole problem of the Akum being present there. What happens if there are several workers? And then let's take a look at the Rashi. Chamisha Schirim Likitim, Dorin B'chadorim Balios. You have five workers in living in different houses and second stories. Alios is attic, second stories. She'ilu hoiso rishus shelahen. If it were their actual domicile, you had five Jews living there. Hoyutzrifin losses kulin be'eruv. Each one would have to contribute food to the eruv. K'nesamasisin bonis mashiv sosin shirim b'chadorim v'chulei. Now that we're talking about the domain of the idol worshipper, what is the din in that case? We have five workers in the house of the goy, and one of them did not contribute to the eruv. Does that make it such that all the rest of the movui of the alley residents would be restricted? Mi amrinon, do you say ki hechi de shavinu lei l'sochiloki kebailim l'hokeu l'hatir eruva b'movui zeh havunami bailim l'achmir? The fact that we view the worker like an owner to contribute toward the eruv, we're looking at the Jew working for the goy as if this Jewish worker is the owner of that property in the lenient sense of his being able to contribute to the movu, even though technically speaking the owner of the property is a goy. So by the same token, would we view Schiro and Lakitos, in the case that you have several of them, as owners also in the direction of stringency? We have multiple owners, each one has to contribute to the Eruv. Oy Dilma, Rashi goes on, Lekulo Shavinu Rabbona Kebailim Avaluchum Rolo. Only in the direction of leniency do we view the Schiro Lakito as an owner, but not when viewing them as an owner would result in a stringency. And in the case that one of them would not contribute and the resultant prohibition would set in, that's a stringency. The Chol Beiruv and Ma'okel. When we deal with halachas of Eruv, we strive to be lenient. Bahani Dira Vavai Lav Didu He. And if you have five workers in the house of a Gentile, that though albeit they live in different rooms, nevertheless it's not really their property. So there's room for, in fact, being lenient in that case. The Gemara continues, the question having been presented, Omar Lay. So Rav Yosef answers, he says sarcastically, if the rules of Schiro and Lakito were said in the direction of leniency, do you think that the application of that rule would be for stringency? No, absolutely not. So that we will view Schiro and Lakito as an owner only in so far as enabling him to contribute toward the Eruv, even though the owner is a goy. But we're not going to view them as literal owners to the extent that if there are five workers, that each one would have to contribute to the Eruv, and if one of them would forget, it would impose prohibition on the rest. Not so, but only in the direction of leniency. Before we close, let us just remind you that we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.